Welcome to Diaries of a Data Scientist, our podcast in which we share about what's important to break into data science, provide valuable insights also for senior data scientists, and invite interesting guests from different data science areas. We're Yasmin and Kate, we're both data scientists and mentors working in industry, and we are sharing here our thoughts and experiences. Let's go!
Hello, guys. This is Darius of a Data Scientist, and today we'll be talking about a very interesting topic that we're kind of aimed to split into two different parts. So today is the part one of how you can improve your data science application in order to get your dream position in the data science world. And as a remark from our side, please, if you like our show, feel free to subscribe and give us a 5-star review. We can talk a little bit like from the personal perspective about this topic, because I feel that it's a kind of sensitive one, and you will not have tips and tricks and how you can hack the interviews in the internet, and just to make it a little bit more concrete to our listeners. Okay, you know that I will just like start maybe explaining a little bit my previous consultation and a mentee that I'm currently mentoring. So let's mention that our talents, our future data science folks, they might have a data science degree currently, or they might not have a data science degree, or they are currently pursuing their data science master programs. What would be the first, you know, advice to improve their data science application so they will not feel this, you know, frustration, all of those like negative emotions when you go ahead applying into like 100 job positions, and unfortunately you will not have any responses or like you're failing them?
Yeah, so I think the most important part is, and that's why we're exactly doing this episode here, is to really think properly through your application and also strategize a little bit more. Data science has been an increasingly popular field. And with that, of course, also more talents and candidates will apply to the top employers and also the employers of your choice. And that's why you really have to think about how to make your application stand out. So first step is like really recognizing you need to properly think this through. And I think for today's episode, we're going to focus on before you're actually applying to a company, and then the process of the application itself. And then in the follow-up episode, we're going to talk you through what is advice that you can apply during the job interview, as well as some continuous tips that you can, you know, follow throughout the whole process. So I think firstly, I would really recommend, so you need to get the basics down to a T. So that really means, you know, if you're not have mastered the basics and also a little bit of beyond, you should really focus on doing that first before following any of the other advice and steps that we're going to show you and explain you today. So a strong foundation in statistics, you know, having Python or maybe for some R is a more preferred programming language, having that down, knowing the machine learning algorithms, knowing how to be able to explain them, choose them wisely, and then going also a little bit of beyond, knowing what's going on in the world, in the field of data science and machine learning. So if someone is asking you, like, you know, what is your opinion on the latest developments in generative AI, you should maybe not be taken by surprise by such a question.
Definitely. You know, right now I am thinking about a question. So let's say that you know how to program, you know, like a little bit of statistics, you know, a little bit of programming of mathematics. But when you got to the machine learning algorithms field, you will see like huge, I don't know how many algorithms we have honestly in there. Like it's probably over 100 or like even beyond that. And I always got a question from the mentees that, okay, how would I know that this is actually the algorithm that I need to know for the foundation? Do you have, like, you know, like tips maybe or like which algorithms are considered to be the foundation of the data mining or the, or like the data science field itself? Just yeah, name I them.
That's also a little bit hard to answer a question. It definitely does depend on your field of interest, right? So maybe mm-hmm. the basic algorithms look differently for natural language processing than they look mm-hmm. in the field of computer vision. But mm-hmm. maybe staying with like the most standard types of data, tabular data, for example, I think things like decision trees, mm-hmm. random forests, in the area of unsupervised learning, different kind of clustering algorithms, k-nearest mm-hmm. neighbors, density-based clustering algorithms, mm-hmm. I don't know, linear and logistic regression,
yes,
SVD. So kind of, the, for me, these are the basics. Please feel free to add, Kate.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm just like listening to you and kind of, I have a lot of flashbacks to what
we're
I
living
said to
the non-tunes. Years of university. Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Like right now, we do have maybe not a full join with you, but definitely in, like the inner join. So what I'm always kind of suggesting to the mentors is that don't try to go to the deep learning or mm-hmm. Crazy neural networks or crazy computer vision, because computer vision can be very, very advanced. Just try to see the basics, like as you just mentioned, linear regression, maybe what is the difference between reach, lasso, elastic net, mm-hmm. like, you know, all of this stuff, maybe like a little bit from the classification part, like as you said, SVD, decision trees, or like maybe what is the difference at least between decision trees, random forests, and logistic regression.
Yes, and a knife base, for example. So also a little bit like more in the probability theories, and for mm-hmm. me, that's really considered basics.
Yeah, definitely. And also like the third part in the data science, which is clustering, and maybe go ahead and check, I don't know, DBA scan, or what else do we have in there? K-means. So just try to go a little bit and pick those algorithms from different fields, and only after mastering those you can go outside of that.
You know what? We're gonna link you one or two pages from the World Wide Web where you can find a great overview. There's so many great learning material and resources on this topic, so we're just gonna put them in the show notes for you. And mm-hmm. again, like having this, these are basics, because like if you're tackling real world problems, usually it's not as simple as saying, oh, I can just apply a k-nearest neighbors algorithm here and I'm done. Sometimes it's even like a whole pipeline and combining mm-hmm. different approaches, maybe starting with a clustering, and then on each cluster you can apply a classification algorithm. So it's usually a little bit more complex, but that's why it's important to have these really basics down to a T to be able to mm-hmm. just apply mm-hmm. them without needing to do your research again.
Yeah, definitely. You know, like out of this point, I do have also kind of a question. So let's say that you've covered the basics, yes? As a data science junior, do you need to include in your application such words as natural language preprocessing, deep learning, I don't know, artificial intelligence? Because sometimes, and this is what I've heard from HRs, that if you would fill your application with all of those like buzzwords in data science, it will give an impression that you're not really sure what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And that is why they will get also a little bit confused. Maybe we might have totally different opinions on that point. I'm just curious, what is yours?
As you know, right? So I'm also in a team lead position. So I have seen my fair share of CVs in that area as well. And I must say, for me, it's like not a immediate KO criteria if someone is using a lot of mm-hmm. these words in his or her resume or CV. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But from my perspective, I really rather prefer to see what you have been up to rather than reading about it, in that sense that I very much value if candidates are, for example, including a link to their GitHub profile and they have some like open public projects there. which I can just take a look at. And, you know, they have a little bit of a data science portfolio that they've built over the years or the months. And I can just take a look at what they've been working on. And best case, they're not just working on, you know, toy examples, but really also taking some more real world data and build it like a, you know, a whole end-to-end chain, starting with like really dissecting the data, visualizing it, building the models, validating them, testing them very, very thoroughly, and then also building maybe a dashboard at the end or something, an application or a streamlit app where you can where you can explore the API that, that they've built. That's what I really, really prefer over having having a choice words in the CV. But for me, it like always comes down to the complete application. So I wouldn't sort out a CV only because I read like the whole range of it really depends.
That is awesome. And I guess this is linked with our second point that we thought to cover, which is it's not only necessary to have a pretty nice foundation in the data science field and to show this into like the application, but also having like real world problems. So for example, you could do the Kaggle competitions and not really using only like toy examples like Ivory's dataset. I think every data scientist like knows Ivory's dataset, but having something more or less more kind of feasible, I would say, that you would have, I don't know, like a lot of outliers, incomplete data set, or you'll be having highly dimensional problems, and try to really put that into your application by showing that you actually have the knowledge in there.
I always recommend also my mentees that online courses and learning about theory, it's very important, but at some point you have to make the jump out of that area and actually go into the direction of solving real-world problems. So and some mentees, you know, they spend a lot of time in that theory area because it also at some point it starts to feel safe, right? So, you know, you take your courses, you do your readings, and you read your papers. But what, at least in the, say, industry, or if you're working for, like, if you want to work for a company, not in the research field, you need to be able to solve real-world problems. And as you said, Kaggle is great. So, and that's also what you can then really use to build your data science portfolio and showcase that as part of your application.
You know, I will just give you my feelings about this part. So I remember that one time I had, I was applying to the data science position, I guess it was over 2 years ago or something like that. And what I feel is that in the, like when you finish the university or like you have different degrees, that you have kind of nailed one of the hardest fields, like one of the, I would say, hardest jobs, because you need to know, you know, computer science, you need to know mathematics, statistics, like a lot of this stuff. So it's kind of like you need to know three fields combined instead of one. And I honestly, like back in those days, I felt a little bit irritated by this fact that besides doing and achieving in those fields, you need to show something additionally, having GitHub accounts. Have you ever had this feeling, or that is just me?
No, I guess I know what you're feeling. Like you've already, you know, taken such a big leap and accomplished the studies, and then employers want to see, oh, you've done internships, you've gathered work experience as working student, you have your data science portfolio, you take part in hackathons and competitions, and you have an active LinkedIn profile, and you're like, like my day only has 24 hours, and I'm like, you know, when you maybe graduated and you've really pushed through the studies, you're 24 years old or 25, and you're like, what else do you want? I know this feeling, and I know it can be hard, and that's why you should really like have a structured approach to this and balance also the time investment in different areas and not just spend the time learning theories, but really also thinking about you need work experience, you need to showcase your also coding abilities. And for that, like having a GitHub profile or taking part in competitions or hackathons, it's really, really great.
Yeah. maybe one part from my side that I would love to add to this point is that I have noticed that a lot of my mentees, they were a little bit like, you know, confused about the fact that if you don't have a working experience, if you don't have the internship, how can you get a position as a data scientist, like, or maybe like how you can start into mm-hmm. like being data scientist in the industry without having this on your application. And that yeah. definitely one of the advice is that you really, really need to put all of your, as you said, right, GitHub, Kaggle competition, everything into your CV in order to showcase what you have done in the past and that you will be able to tackle, let's say, almost any single problem in the industry, in the company. I don't know why, but this part is always got missed when you haven't had any experience so far. And that is why please put that into your CV and talk about that on the interviews. It doesn't matter if it was like in the industry or not. So you do have an experience in that field already.
Exactly. And many times the question arises in the interviews or in the sessions I have with my mentees. Mm-hmm. How do I get my first internship? So how do I, you know, make the first jump into that area? Because many times companies want to see, oh, you already have work experience, and then only then they take you. So it's a little bit of a chicken and the egg problem. And I completely get this. And like one advice I can share here is also for your internship or working student positions, maybe don't be super, super picky for the very first one. And even if it's maybe more in the direction of, I don't know, of a related field, data analysis, data engineering, and at some point you want to be like a data scientist, take it, get the experience, and already having this experience and having this internship as part of your portfolio, as part of your application, will help you land the next one. And, you know, slowly but steadily getting there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that is, I guess, pretty interesting right now. Where we're going with our conversation. So we've been through that, what do you have to do in order to get your first position, right? But I know for sure I had this problem a couple of times, how to select, how to choose a perfect company for yourself.
Yeah, I think choosing your future or potential future employer wisely is very, very important. And that's also a step where many young talents, you know, graduates are struggling with a little bit. That's why it's great to have a mentor at your side, such as you, Kate, like helping students with that transition. And as you said, so I think the way that I see this whole process is, yes, the companies are vetting you as potential candidates, as like potential hires, but at least in the same way, you are vetting the company as a potential employer. So it's as important for you to ask also like maybe tough questions during the interview process and, you know, making sure that, I don't know, the companies is really dealing with the types of problems and data that you're interested in, and that they have the kinds of sophisticated problems that you would like to work on, that they have the maturity as an organization, as a data-driven organization, that you'd like to work on. So make sure to also really check for yourself, is that the right company for me? And am I going to be, I mean, I think it's a little bit of an illusion to say I'm 100% every day happy with the job that everyone's doing. I think like having that illusion will get you frustrated pretty easily. But at least most of the times you should be able to say, yes, I'm feeling satisfied. I'm having fun. You know, that it kind of just fits for you.
Yeah. That is amazing. I will try right now to express my feelings, which I had, I guess, in the very beginning. I don't know how many, like 5 or 6 years ago. Imagine that you have just finished your degree and you really want to get into the company that is very mature. They're like, let's say, doing a very advanced data science projects. But you are feeling that you might not be enough. And that is why you kind of like you're in the rush. You need to get your first position somehow, right? And you cannot go to the companies that actually you want to work for because they will not really get any benefits from having you as a part of the team. And you're like getting between those frustration and wishes feeling. I guess like pretty much every single data scientist should have experienced this kind of thing in the very beginning. Did you have it? Or you're like, was the lucky one?
Tough question. I think it kind of depends on also a little bit your history, right? I was in a kind of lucky position to have accomplished both of my studies while working basically 50% of the time at a great employer. So already once I've started with my bachelor studies, I was in this dual system, which basically you come out of with a guaranteed amount of great work experience having different rotations. So even if I wouldn't have decided to basically also during my master's staying with that company 50% working while studying, having this work experience from the dual studies would have made it, I think, incredibly easier to also gain different internships, working student positions at other companies as well. So, and also, as you see, this could be something that you could look into, especially if you're here located in Germany. If you are interested in pursuing your studies in a dual system, which is also possible for the masters, just as a possibility. So, I have never been in that situation, but what I can say from the kind of team lead position. I have had this talks where young students applied for like internships, and of course I want to take everyone and I want to help everyone, but at some point you have to get this employer perspective and saying I need to also invest time in the person. I want to invest time in the supervision, so you need to get something out of it as a kind of team perspective, right? And I think having down the basics at that point is really the most important thing. So if you're applying for an internship, but you have not yet actually started programming in Python, for example, for me, that's going to be a hard no at that point, because I can't spend the time learning Python for you or with you. That has to be for me like a absolute basic. You have to have that down. You should actually learn it as part of your studies, like point A.
Yes.
But you should really, you know, invest some time into that also next to your studies to really make sure that you're comfortable in applying that. So I think that will, you know, following some of these tips that we share here, even if you don't have like a single internship or working student position in your resume, will already greatly help with your application. And one more thing, we also have such nice things such as open source community. Yes. And that way you can actually work in a team remotely, mostly remotely, work on actual problems that people are investing time in, gaining this experience without needing a single employer, right? So maybe instead of trying to getting your first internship, if you're struggling with that, take a look at different open source projects, see where different projects need further contributions, need help, where you can contribute. Do that for a time, and you know, you can of course also showcase and highlight that as part of your application. And I've met great colleagues who basically build up very successful open source projects, and it definitely helped their career trajectory.
Okay, guys, I hope that you've listened this pretty carefully.
Note this down, guys.
Note this down, yes. Write it.
So, Kate, now I've got a question for you. You've been asking a lot of questions for me today. Yes. I've got a question
Let's do
for
that.
You. So, imagine now you've made all of these steps, have the basics, you've gained some work experience, you maybe contributed to open source. Now you're actually wanting to apply for your first full-time position. How would you prepare your application, and how would you prepare for the interview?
Amazing thing. Honestly, this is what I love, honestly. Answer the first question, how would I prepare my application? I would suggest to start with trying to understand what you want to have out of this position. So the data science field is full of subfields. You might go to the computer vision, to the NLP, you might go to statistics, you might go to time series. And for every all of those like parts, you will be having totally different algorithms sometimes. And that is why you need to understand in which kind of field you would love to work, where like you have this passion, and that search the jobs accordingly to your, let's say, passion. And imagine that you have found this position. What I always suggest is that, firstly and ideally, your application has to be unique for every single job description, job position that you might find on like out there on LinkedIn. Second part as well was the cover letters. Try to make it very unique for every single company, for every single application. Third part is that this is not cheating. This is a disclaimer. This is not cheating. What do you see a job position? And you see the job description, the skills that it's better to have, and that you can, based on that job description, you can adjust your application accordingly. So by doing that, how you will benefit out of this? You will not be having in your application totally irrelevant experience, perhaps, which is not needed for that position.
Mm-hmm.
And you will highlight only the skills that are required for that position. So you will kind of be more concise and more clear by showing what you have in your application and how it can match with the job position. And I think it will just boost your interviewing process later.
Yeah. Like, I mean, imagine the process, right? So usually... Mm-hmm. You have a hiring manager and you have a like HR team and a recruiter from HR who are working together in the process of seeing through your applications. And sometimes you get hundreds of applications for one position, even just a working student position. If you're having like a, you know, like a good job description and a cool team and a cool employer behind it. And like usually the first round is made by the recruiter, the day check, okay, this is the job description and this is the application of each candidate, and then they will just check. And in many cases, I mean, also the HR team, the recruiter, they may not know very deeply about the field of data science, which is also something we may talk about in a different episode, but you just have to imagine. So they only see what the hiring manager put in the job description. And then maybe even looking for keywords and for things that are matching that description in each candidate's application. So this will really only help to already survive very likely the first rounds. Of course, you should not, you know, put something in your application which is not actually part of your skill set. Of course, you have to know that, because I can tell you, latest in the first interview, when you're being interviewed by someone from the team, by the hiring manager, other colleagues in that area, they will ask questions and you will be detected. So don't bother, you know, putting something in the application which is not actually there. But you can definitely, I would say, adapt the descriptions and adapt the way that you put it in your application, as Kate just nicely explained, to make it more matching the job description. And as you said, it's not cheating, and it's just basically showing that you've actually took time to read through the job description, that you made thoughts and you've put work into your application, into your CV, and you have not just chosen to, you know, send out your standard package.
Yeah, definitely. Also, what I've seen quite a lot of time from different companies is that they will write in the very kind of end of the job description that if you are about to apply on that position, please state in the mail, I don't know, subject, what is going to be 2 plus 2.
Really?
You have this kind of, yes, that you is haven't seen that?
Interesting. Yes.
It's like they kind of already make
I'm gonna
sure
start
that
putting that in our job descriptions.
That's pretty awesome. Because like they already want to filter people that are just like sending out their yeah kind of packages.
Haven't
like
read it.
Or they already read it through like the entire application. Yeah.
But looking back at past interviews that you had yourself, Kate, so how would you say is the mixture there between, say, technical questions that are trying to check, like, what is your experience with the field, versus also these more behavioral questions, soft skill-based questions? So how would you describe that mixture?
I would say, from my perspective, so if you are applying on data science positions which are not going to be connected to any business partners, so like you'll be like really techy guy sitting in your home office and coding like 24/7, then by my experience, you would not be having any behavioral interviews. So you will not be checked. Of course, they will check you in the first interview if you're not a psychopath. Definitely how you would react, how you would answer, but you will not be having this soft skills interviews games. But for example, for my position currently, I had to take this test because once you got a little bit outside of the tech field, so kind of you will be doing maybe, I don't know in which proportion, maybe like 50% of technical skills and 50% of communicating and talking with business folks. They want to make sure that you can speak on both languages, like data language and business language, and that you have nailed sort of the soft skills in order to lead the projects, in order to lead teams. Mm-hmm. And that is why it always depends on the job that you're applying to. How is that for you? Do you have the same?
Yeah, very, very like interesting. I think I look at this situation or problem a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. I fully see your point, right? If you really are looking for a very, very, very specific skill set that anyway only a handful of people have, I would maybe not be as picky looking at the soft skill behavior side. You've made it through the first barrier, as you've nicely explained. But otherwise, I feel at least in all of the interviews that I've been through from a candidate point, but also now from a team lead position, I'm always putting a lot of focus on the behavioral questions, on the soft skills questions. Mm-hmm. So for me, that is really what in the end distinguishes the candidate. So, you know, you get a lot of great applications and many candidates may have the basics down. They have work experience and this really makes your choice incredibly hard. And then I usually take a look at the soft skills section, and there you see sometimes very, very big differences in how people have, you know, also developed that part of their personality and how much focus that they've put on that. And that's for me like sometimes really narrowing down the decision and the choices greatly. I can just say from my subjective perspective, I do value that, and I put a focus on it when I'm interviewing. Maybe to wrap it up a little bit, we have talked a lot about also choosing your employers wisely. Kate has described that, of course, first you need to know yourself what you want. You may ask yourself, now, how do I actually vet myself, the employer? And I think we've mentioned you have to ask tough questions. But there's also really cool tools nowadays, like Glassdoor or Kununu, or I think also Indeed is providing reviews and ratings and anonymous basically comments and feedback about different employers, and it definitely helps to check that out. Personally, I'm also reached out to quite a lot on LinkedIn where people just ask, how is it like working at your company? Can we just have like a virtual coffee? Can you tell me a little bit about it? So also this is one option on how you can get in touch with working staff at the company you're interested in, and just trying to get a feeling for what is the atmosphere, what is the culture there. I think this really, really also helps to to try to get a feeling for if you want to work there or not. And as we then said, like asking really, really tough questions to make sure you're not really ending up somewhere where you then have to leave in a few months again because it was just not the right choice. And this can still happen no matter how thoroughly you've prepared your interview. It can always happen that, you know, at the end, the field you're working in or the company you're working in, it's just not the right match. And this is also okay. So don't feel bad about not staying somewhere for at least 2 years if you're unhappy, if you feel like it's not serving your career, it's not serving your development.
Yeah. And in the next episode, part two, we're going to dive more deeper into the questions of during the interview process and how to continue learning in this data science industry.
I think there was so much value in this episode. I hope you've made some notes. Otherwise, we have you covered in the show notes, of course. So we're going to structure our advice a little bit in the show notes as well. I'm really excited also for the next episode. I hope you are too. And if you liked it, as mentioned, leave a comment on YouTube or give us a rating on Spotify or also interact with us using the poll feature in Spotify. We're always very happy to read about your feedback and comments.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This was Diaries of a Data Scientist by Yasmin and Kate. And if you enjoyed the episode, remember to check out our YouTube channel and our LinkedIn pages for more engaging content from the data science world. Thank you for today and seeing you in the comments.